always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this?
And we're live. Welcome everybody here to the Lakers Lounge Podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin, senior Lakers insider as well as lead Lakers content creator for Offside, joined on this fine Tuesday afternoon by Harrison Fagan. Harrison, have you been gripped by the World Cup? I know you're not really much of a soccer player. I mean, you're not much of an athlete in any real sense, but like, do you ever watch soccer?
What does it have to do with watching it?
Well, because I was going to ask, like, because a lot of like soccer play, like soccer is one of those weird sports that
it's like, hey, Anthony, you're bad at budgeting. Have you been watching the World Cup?
It's no, those, you know, I feel like there's a lot more carryover in people who played soccer and their interest in soccer in this country than in like football. Like the
okay, first of all, how dare
people
you
who I play on
I played I was the starting center defender for the AYSO spring select team when I was like I don't know, like 9 or 10. So I don't know, does that make me a bad athlete?
I've seen you do athletic things, Harrison.
I was a problem on the soccer field before my growth spurt.
I could see you being like good at getting in people's way.
I was pretty good at kicking the ball. I could send it pretty far. That was my main utility as a defender, with sort of just like
long legs, the ball out.
And physicality. This is a whole other tangent, but I got kicked out of multiple games for fighting
at 9.
No, this was like, I don't know, I was probably like 11.
That's crazy.
I had a bit of a temper problem as a child competitor. I was out there making Wemby's elbows look tame.
Harrison, how dare you even mention that? It's besmirching of his character to even mention that on several occasions he tried to injure players.
I did enjoy yesterday somebody tweeting out there like, look, Wemby was at the hospital visiting sick kids. This is who you're bullying online for being a dirty player, by the way. Those are different areas of life.
It was like when they would be like,
he's like sort of a poor loser. I wasn't saying that he doesn't ever do anything nice for children. Like,
all right. Well, really quickly, before we dive even further down that rabbit hole, if we choose to, today's show, as always, is brought to you in part by Prize Picks. Use that promo code HMA and get $50 worth of free lineups. When you sign up, use the code and make a $5 lineup of your own. I personally have really enjoyed picking various sides and players in this World Cup. It has made this whole experience that much more fun. Well, it was a lot less fun when Spain 0-0 drew against Cape Verde, which was just like, you monsters. Farron, you're never seeing the gates of heaven. But other than that, it's been great, honestly. So check that out. As always, please hit that like and subscribe button. Turn on notifications for the show as well as YouTube. Tell your friends about the show. Tell your enemies that you hate it. And then if you guys are listening to the show in the morning via podcast, please hit that subscribe button wherever it is that you get them, preferably on Odyssey. But I truly do not care where it is that you listen. Also, rare quick shout out here. Today is actually my wedding anniversary. So Jen, there is absolutely zero chance that you are listening, but just in case, you know, the autoplay feature on your phone malfunctions and the podcast starts, happy anniversary, babe. All right. So today on the show, we I have noticed, and I have talked about this on the show as well, but I've noticed a bit of a debate pop up over Jalen Brunson's contract and the impact that it might have across the rest of the league as this CBA has fully taken hold of the NBA. And so some people are saying, I've noticed, I think more specifically, obviously all due respect, but Joel Anderson, your tweet popped up and called it pro-owner propaganda to mention that superstars should take any kind of a pay cut. I have seen, I believe it was Ethan Strauss, argue it for the pragmatism of these pay cuts. And then there have been takes kind of within that spectrum. I truly do know, I don't know where I land on this spectrum. I think it oscillates. I find myself all over the map on this subject, but I do think it's an interesting subject and one that NBA fans specifically should be at least as informed as they can possibly be about, at least for the reasons for it now compared to the arguments for it, you know, in prior years. So Harrison, have you noticed this debate? Where do you find yourself sitting before we dive into the minutia of what makes the debate different now versus, you know, 10 years or so ago?
Yeah, I mean, I find myself on the side of, you know, guys should obviously do whatever they want. I mean, it's their career, it's their money, it's their bank account. You know, if you want to say, I am prioritizing getting the max possible value that I can for my services, I can't really be mad at you for that, because it's like, hey, that's what most people would do in your situation. But it mm-hmm. does, and it doesn't mean that you are like a bad person or like less of a star or so for doing so. But I think yeah. where it is fair for us to completely point out is that, you know, it does make it easier now under these rules for teams to build winners around guys that do take that pay cut. So, well, I don't think that, you know, it's like, I don't think that it's totally fair to just be like, oh, so-and-so selfish for taking the max possible value for themselves. I do think that we can still point out that, hey, you know, just again, like for example, like Luka is obviously worth a max contract by any definition. But, you know, would the Lakers have an easier time building under the second apron if Luka had taken like a Jalen Brunson style cut? Like probably. Is that the right thing to do? Is that something that we should be arguing for? Like, hey, Luka, you should like save the owner's money. Like, I still feel, even with the new rules, like kind of icky about that, because, yep. you know, eventually it is like we can say that there are basketball reasons for it, but the basketball reasons only exist because the owners didn't want to have to get shamed for not paying into the tax. And so it's a really complicated issue. But I land more on the side of like, I don't have any problem with like fans wanting their guys to do that. Like, I don't think that that's wrong and or to celebrate it when it happens. But I also, again, like I can't judge guys on like a personal level for, you know, taking what the market says that the value of their services is.
I think there are several things going on at the same time in this discussion. And the factor that I don't think gets brought up frequently enough is the role that the players and the players' union had in this current CBA. And
fair point.
I think that when we talk about, you know, fans now asking or demanding or requesting whatever verb you want to use there, players or superstars to take less so that their team can be better, that has always kind of existed. There's always been a bit of a tension between fans and athletes and the amount of money that those athletes make. But now that there are practical and like tangible impacts that, you know, the cost of a roster have on the front office's ability to build out its team, that conversation has now changed. And had the players' union pushed hard enough against the owners for putting into place this apron system And what was Harrison? It was maddening when it happened, but it was crystal clear that the second apron was going to be a hard cap on teams, and that owners were going to tell their front offices, hey, look, we just gave you guys, or we just gave ourselves the excuse to place a hard cap on these rosters. And
extremely obvious the day the rules came out.
It was within the first thing I saw was like, this is, why did you do this? You know?
Yeah.
And you know, as a result of this, and I pulled it up, so I'm going to go ahead and try to present the rules of this apron. Okay. So this is where it's important that fans understand the impact that this has on, and we don't need to go too deep into it. The one that faces the Lakers probably most likely this year is the first apron rules, and what you are immediately hard capped at the first apron if you do some of these things. So if you acquire a player in a sign and trade, you cannot go beyond the first apron. If you use a pre-existing trade exception, you cannot go beyond the first apron. If you take back more money in a trade, you are then hard capped at the first apron. And if you are, if you sign a player waived to the regular season who had a salary of $12.9 million or more, that also triggers a first apron hard cap. You cannot use a trade exception created from a new trade and go beyond the first apron. And you are only allowed to use the $5.2 million mid-level exception and stay or go beyond. Or no, you were not allowed to go beyond the first apron if you signed somebody to that $5.2 million taxpayer mid-level exception. The second apron gets even more strict if you go beyond it, right? You can't acquire a player and assign a trade, all of the other ones that you weren't allowed to do with the first apron stuff, but you have a first round pick frozen if a team would. Oh no, all right, so these are the rules that were made like back when the CBA was put into place. But if you stay above the second apron for more than like two out of any 3 year stretch, you have a first round pick frozen at the back half of the draft. If you go above the first apron or the second apron, you cannot sign a player who gets bought out at all. If you make any trade whatsoever and you're above the second apron, you have to send out less money than you take back in. So like, the point of this discussion isn't necessarily just to go through these rules and present them in this super easy to read graph that the NBA made for us. The point of it is just to isolate the differences and the impact that the CBA has had on this discussion. Because look, when NBA players before, like, cheap owners have always existed. And yeah, if a superstar played for one of those cheap owners and that owner wasn't willing to go above the luxury tax to build a good team around that superstar had every reason in the world at that moment to just demand out, just demand a trade. You are never going to compete for a championship. So long as you have an owner who was not willing to pay luxury taxes under the prior CBA. Now, if you have one of those cheap owners who still exist, that cheap owner can go to that superstar and say, look, we would love to go into the tax. We would love to be able to do some of these things and go above the first apron or go above the second apron. But unfortunately, our hands are tied. I'm just so sorry. And it's disingenuous as hell. And at the end of the day, like, if you're that superstar,
you should have CJ McCollum and Grant Williams negotiate harder.
Yeah,
this is your fault.
Well, but like,
I just wish you believed in you as much as I do.
Right. And like, what players you know, earned by way of signing up for the system, right? They were allowed to invest in gambling companies. They were allowed to invest in marijuana companies. And the thinking then, according to the people that I've spoken to, when I ask, like, why did you do this to members of the players union? You know, that their response is like, look, we gave up some potential earning by way of NBA contracts, but we opened up potential earnings by way of other investment opportunities. And, you know, that to me feels like some galaxy brain stuff where you are not keeping the main thing. But at the end of the day, I'm not going to tell people what to do with their money whenever they earn it or however they earn it. I will, however, say that, you know, okay, you better make good on those investments, because what we've seen ever since then is hardline negotiations between teams and superstars, right? Like we saw with Paul George and the Clippers. We have seen teams, you know, treat not just the second apron as their de facto hard cap, but oftentimes the first apron, which, you know, puts those teams at a severe disadvantage. And now that we have seen Jalen Brunson's Knicks be able to surround him with Karl Anthony Towns making the amount of money that he does, with OG Anunoby making the amount of money that he does, and Mikal Bridges making the amount of money that he does, and they've been able to keep that core together, you know, it for a player, like I've seen, I don't know if you've noticed this, but like Jalen Brunson has now all of a sudden joined conversations with like Kobe. And I saw Bill Simmons say that he is now better than Steve Nash and that he is now better than Jason Kidd and he is now better than Luka and stuff like that. And I think that kind of the Kobe stuff is just outright insane. Like when I see those comparisons made, it's like, okay, yes, Jalen Brunson makes jumpers late in games. That is the extent of the similarities that he has with Kobe Bryant. But like the as far as like, you know, the players,
some of the work ethic and the seriousness stuff. Like, I mean, let's not like I don't think that they're very much like similar basketball players, but you can tell that Jalen like went to the school of Kobe in terms of like how he conducts himself. Yeah.
He has like great footwork and like the way that he goes about scoring. Some of
the
mannerisms
are in there. Yeah, the footwork stuff is, you know, just it's very clear that he has practiced every single shot that he takes, even the craziest ones, like hundreds of times. You know, it's like you don't get touch that automatic where it's like you're tossing it behind your head, you know, and it's swishing in it without that level of practice. Again, I don't think that they're that similar basketball players, but I don't want to like dismiss Jalen like totally out of hand.
It's not dismissing him completely out of hand to say he's not anywhere near as good at basketball as Kobe Bryant.
No. Yeah. Like, I agree with that. Yeah. 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 I just thought that you were saying like they weren't even remotely similar at all. And it's like, no, I mean, there's some similar, you can see the influence coming down. I'm sorry. I'm like, I'm arguing with you for no reason, but,
but all right. So, but like the conversation though about like some of the players that Jalen Brunson has leapfrogged, you know, and like his caliber of a basketball player being on the level of, you know, Luka and Nash and Kidd. Nash, I'd be willing to hear out, honestly. Like, I think Nash is kind of overrated historically, but as far as like Jason Kidd goes, that's a tough one. Luka, I'm not really willing to put Brunson on Luka's level as a basketball player, but it should be noted that if Luka took less in his extension, you know, as much less in his extension that's about to kick in as Jalen Brunson took in his extension that is already kicked in, you would be able to put a more talented roster around Luka Doncic. And what I would say, though, I think a critical part of this conversation about, you know, pay cuts and all of this stuff, what I am not arguing for is for that player to take less and for the owner to pocket the money. If the superstar in question here takes less and the owner fails and the owner's front office fails to build the roster that superstar took less to build, then that superstar again can hold that owner to account and be like, all right, get me out of here. I took less to be able to compete for championships here, and you weren't able to put me on a team that will make good on that, you know? And that's and been the lack of trust between LeBron and Rob Pelinka.
I think it also is important to point out here, like, the difference in Luka and Brunson's situations. If you're Luka, you know, again, I see what Concrete Table is saying about, like, the difference. It, like, Brunson took the max, you know, that he could take at the time, basically, and, you know, and could have gotten more had he waited. I think that's sort of, to me, I understand what you're saying, but it's a distinction without a difference, because, like, Luka wouldn't have signed the earlier extension that was worth less, you know, just to do the same thing. It's like Brunson, and it's not like the Knicks wouldn't have offered Brunson that the max amount this summer had he not taken that sort of earlier extension, or, you know, whenever he was going to be up. I think it is a real sacrifice, and I think Brunson does deserve credit for that, and, like, putting winning above all else. But he is also in a very different situation where, you know, it's like he has the ultimate trust in the Knicks brain trust. My dad's on the assistant coaching. My dad's, like, the lead assistant coach. He gets to stay. Even if they fire the head coach, my dad gets to stay. And he is going to be around. And, you know, that's nice. And, you know, the GM is literally my godfather. You know, I have a ton of faith that and you know, his son, my GM's son, is my agent. Like, this is a family business, and I have the utmost trust in all of these people that they are going to do their absolute best to do right by me. And I trust their basketball vision because I've known them for forever. And I trust that we see a lot of things the same way. And I trust that they know ball. Where, you know, it's like, let's just, if we use Luka as an example, if you're Luka, what has Rob Pelinka shown you as of last summer? You know, when you get here, you barely know the Lakers at all. He's shown you that, like, he sort of tried to pull off a trade and then couldn't do it and, like, voided the medicals. And then, you know, it, like, if he were, and Rob probably didn't do this, but it, like, if he had come and he'd said, hey, how about the Brunson deal? You know, how about you take, like, a lot less? And here's what I can build if you do that. Like, if you're Luka, what reason do you have to trust that, you know? And that he's going to be able to execute on that vision and be able to get those things done. And so it is like the Brunson thing is a really unique situation, too, that I don't think that we can understate, where it's like that is truly like a family affair thing over there, where all of those guys have a ton of trust in each other. And most stars do not have that level of trust in their organization, and really, nor should they.
So really quickly on the Jalen Brunson, I agree that, like, the factors that you're talking about being why he has the amount of trust in the Knicks, like, that is really important to point out, makes this very, very different and unique. As far as, like, Brunson taking or not taking a discount, given that he signed the most for the most that he could have at the time that he signed it, most superstars will wait to get to free agency there.
Yeah.
So that, like, and knowing that the money that they can sign for now is still going to be there at the very least by the time you get to the summer, and they'll, like, they won't even conduct negotiations at that time, you know, about an extension, because it's like, no, it doesn't behoove me to have this conversation now when in a matter of months, I am going to be able to sign for X amount of money, right?
And like, very different situation, but Austin, you know, we can use as a direct, not quite one-to-one example, because Austin has never made the amount that Brunson had made previous to this extension, and his dad's not an NBA, a former NBA player who's, like, on the coaching staff as well, making Lord knows how much. But, like, Austin, you know, the Lakers offered him the max that they could, and Austin said, no, I'm going to take the max that I can get next summer, because I know that it's going to be more than what you can pay me right now.
Right. Or even, like, another example of that along the Austin lines, and it's like with player options, right? Like, technically you could opt in, and that is the most that you could make in your current contract, is just by opting in. But most players will opt out if they've had even a decent season for the sake of either longer term contract or more money. So I just think it's a distinction without a difference, you know, trying to argue that Jalen did or did not take a discount here. So anyway, like, this whole discussion about, like, you know, is or is not, like, the question I have on the right there is, what do stars owe us, right? The fans. And I mean, most athletes would probably say nothing. And I honestly, like, it's kind of hard to disagree, right? They owe, like, it like, there are some superstars who would even argue that, like, they don't even owe us playing on a nightly basis, right? Like, they like, it's just like, I show up for the amount of times that I need to show up to be contractually eligible for the money that I am owed, and that is it. And you know, I would prefer not to be that kind of callous, but there at the same time, there have been times where I have been that callous with the content that I produce, where it's like, oh, you're not paying me anymore. Well, guess who's not getting content, you know? So that, like, same time,
I can confirm, I've seen Anthony load manage because the checks didn't come through.
Yeah. I mean, like, and at that point, that is affecting the listener, right? The audience. I don't like calling people fans, but like, that does. Right. Like, well, that's the apples to apples comparison here. And to me, I think I owe the audience honesty and a regular show, a show of a certain caliber, and you know, and at times that means going above and beyond, you know, like during this time of year, the occasional extra episode or something like that when something breaks. But then it also sometimes means in, like, the middle of August, all right, I'm going to take this Friday off or this Sunday off or whatever, you know, and that's like, that's, I think, something of an agreement between myself and my audience. Now, there are some creators who don't take those extra days off and also produce, and they have larger audiences. And that's a trade-off that I am aware of that I'm making. But as far as, like, NBA superstars and what they, given how much more money they make than us, I would argue that perhaps they owe a little bit more than I owe my audience, right? And you know, if I'm, it, and I think also part of this is how the athlete frames their intentions and their priorities, right? Like, if a NBA superstar tries to tell us that their absolute utmost priority is to win championships, and then they go out and they sign a contract that pays them $70 million per year compared to comparable players to their level who are making half of what they are making. I'm sorry that I'm not going to sit here and question your priorities, but what I will say factually, you know, objectively, factually correct here is that contract is going to make building a team around you that much more difficult.
And that winning a champion, that you do not get to say winning a championship is the most important thing to you.
Yeah. And by the way, it's perfectly fine if somebody says the most important thing to me is making the most amount of money that I can possibly make before I can no longer play this sport anymore, because I have a finite window here. Like, one of the key factors here in the inherent negotiating advantage that owners have over the CBA is that owners can own a team for an indefinite amount of time. Athletes can only play at an NBA level for a finite amount of time, unless you're LeBron.
Yeah, then you get to play forever.
But, like, so if an NBA player was injected with truth serum and says, what matters the absolute most to me right now is that I make the most money that I can for the 10 to 15 years that I can play in the NBA, I would say, good on you. Go out there and do it, yeah. Joe Johnson. But, like, or Bradley Beal. Like if that is your intention, then, like, go for it. But also, I'm also going to be a little less interested in having you on my favorite basketball team, because I want guys on the team that I root for to be more focused on winning a championship than maximizing their earning potential as far as what is impacted by the cap. This is another part of this thing too, Harrison. I think it's really interesting we're having this conversation right now is Adam Silver drags his feet so that he doesn't have to punish the Clippers by taking their top five pick this year.
Do you think he's just hoping that people are going to, like, something big enough is going to happen that people are going to forget?
It's the Veep thing. Did you watch Veep?
Yeah. No, he's like, I don't know. Yeah. Maybe Tom Hanks could die.
Exactly.
I shouldn't say that. Toy Story 5's dropping right now. Like, that's I'm sorry, Tom Hanks. I hope you live forever.
Yeah. But like the aspiration thing, I think, here is worth mentioning, because if cap circumvention goes relatively unpunished, and cap circumvention that is as obvious as what the Clippers attempted to do with Kawhi Leonard without getting caught, if that goes unpunished, then this conversation becomes even more intriguing, right? Because at that point, NBA players can just be like, yeah, sign me to the minimum and I'll plant a shit ton of trees. We're not getting punished.
I'll do one ad for the fake company that you set up.
Right. You know, and so like this is where I think, you know, the state of the league is called into question here too, because if Jalen Brunson can have a better roster built around him than like Austin Reeves is going to have built around him when they make relatively similar money, with Brunson being a better player than Austin, like if I'm Rob Pelinka in the Lakers specifically, if I'm Mark Walter and I'm like, hey, we're the Lakers, I could get you any number of ads and ad opportunities and marketing opportunities that team like that like the Spurs and that like the Bucks and the Thunder and basically every team outside of like the Warriors and Knicks can possibly get you. That gives the Lakers a real advantage here. That's why if you want to be a particularly, you know, cynical and Machiavellian Laker fan, you should be rooting for the Clippers to not get punished, because that opens the gateway for Mark Walter and all of the money and all of the opportunities that he has to just wreak havoc on the league. But like
hey, Mark Walter got his really rich friend who does movies to pay Luca a $40 million bonus for appearing as a cameo in The Odyssey 2.
Right. who would Luca be? Who would be a fun character for Luca to be?
Luca plays one of the Giants. They just don't do CGI. They just actually hire NBA players to stand next to the actors, so they look like that much bigger.
That works for me.
Matt Damon's like, that's like the biggest guy I've ever seen. I can't fight him.
Honestly, like, I miss the yesteryear when that used to be a thing. Like, they used to just bring in giant people, but pre-CGI, and it would be this like practical effect. Andre the Giant, right? But anyway, I don't know. As far as like this conversation and whether I'm comfortable telling a player, like, are you comfortable telling a player to take less?
No. I mean, like, personal, like, I'm going to go up to Austin Reeves' face.
No, and be like, hey, like, I mean, like, arguing on a stupid show like this. Like, yeah, no, like,
I get kicked out of summer league for running up to Austin being like, you don't understand the second apron penalties. Austin, if you could just listen to me for like 5 minutes, I can make a pitch on how much more help you can get if you just take a little bit less. Okay.
He's like, I just listened to this from Rob and it wasn't very compelling.
Yeah. No, I think I want to circle back, because like you said, what if stars owe us? And I think that is like sort of an interesting framing there, because, you know, you could say like, you know, I'll just use an example that's like not even related to the Lakers, so that like no one like sort of is in their feelings about it or like feels a certain way. Like, so if you're Kevin Durant, do you owe the fans anything? Like, not really. You know, you don't owe the fan, like, you don't necessarily, like, you don't have to do anything specific to make people like you or to make people, like, want to follow you from team to team or to make you, it, like, it's someone's favorite player or whatever. But if you don't do those things, don't be surprised, you know, at the end of your career when you're sort of like a man without a country, you know, and that's like an extreme example of this, where it's like, you know, you can tell KD sort of grappling with like, wait, why does nobody like me? And it's like, well, you've sort of picked me at every single opportunity, and that's within your right to do that, and you know, and to do those things and to comport yourself that way, but like, you know, and to like talk down to the fans and, you know, tell everyone that they're an idiot all the time and whatever. But it's like, when it comes, like, that's the reason, you know, ultimately, that you're never going to be as beloved as somebody like a Jalen Brunson or like a Steph or whatever, a guy who like just sort of always tries to do the right thing, quote unquote, by his fans and inspires a lot of loyalty in that way. And so, again, like, you know, they don't necessarily, it's like Austin this summer, he doesn't owe the fans anything. Like, he I totally understand if he wants to get the most amount of money that he can possibly get. But you know, the reality is that we have to acknowledge the reality. Like, it doesn't become like we're like caping for billionaires or whatever, that we're acknowledging the reality that, hey, if you pay Austin $43 million, like, that's going to make it a lot harder to build a contender around him and Luka. And that's not to say Austin's a bad person if he takes that, or that he shouldn't be agitating for every penny that he can get. But there are rewards and trade-offs for every single decision that you make individually. And like, I think it's just important for us to be able to talk about that honestly on a case-by-case basis. And so, you know, we can say that, you know, hey, like, I, you know, just like, again, like, I wish star player X that plays for my favorite team would have taken a little bit less. And like, that doesn't mean that you don't think that like that person's valuable, or that you don't like them, or you think that they're a bad person for getting the most money that they possibly could. But you are acknowledging a reality. And again, it's like, you know, the owners, like, the owners are billionaires who, like, we don't necessarily have like any great allegiance to. Like, I don't have any like super fond feelings towards Mark Walter, and I'm like, man, I'd just like to save that guy some money, you know. But it is it's a reality of the like CBA that these are the things that as fans, like, we are forced to hope sort of for these market inefficiency, and it's the most insidious part of why the owners put it in there. But I also don't want to act like the players, like, we're like asking them to play for poverty wages either. You know, it's like Jalen Brunson is going to be just fine on his, you know, discount deal and be totally happy, and he's going to be a legend in New York forever. And it's like, can you put a price on that? Like, probably not.
Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE, and I'm Jimmy Uso. Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
And so it just depends on what you value. Do you value getting the most possible money that you can up front? Or do you value, like, sort of potentially being like having the upside of, hey, if I do win this championship, like, fans are like, I am going to be fans' guy. Like, they are going to love me forever. Fans are going to build their own statue of me without permits, like, outside MSG before the Knicks are even allowed to, you know? It's just, you know, like, that's just sort of the reality. Is like, you can decide what is important to me. Like, is it getting the most possible money, or is it being beloved? And those aren't necessarily mutually exclusive, but taking the less money could make the second one a lot more likely, because people are going to remember that you did that. They're going to be like, hey, that was not just that Brunson led a, you know, if I'm a Knicks fan, it's not just that Brunson led us to that title, you know, and played amazing during that playoff run, but it's also Brunson is the reason that our starting five is incredible, because we were able to pay all these other guys like out the nose to get them all on the same team and still have our like roster building options available to us.
Yeah. It's, you know, the whole concept of like, how will you be remembered and the impact that you have on fans and how you want to be seen by fans and stuff like that. That's this very, it's a very fickle notion, because how fans feel about you is a very fickle thing. Like I'll never forget Lakers fans booing Kobe on opening night after he demanded a trade, and then by the end of that game chanting MVP for him. You know,
and again, this is maybe controversial, but like, fair enough. If you say I don't want to be here, fans are allowed to not like that.
Yeah, well, I like, that's kind of my point here, is that like we and athletes can't control how a fan is going to react to every new development over the course of your career.
Yeah,
one of the very, very few things that you can control is something like this, where you're willing to let, you know, where you're willing to do whatever it takes to give your team its best chance at surrounding you with championship caliber talent. That is going to be the thing that all fans always care about first and foremost forever. And then you have to make good on that and actually do the winning when it comes time to do the winning. And that's also a very important factor in how Jalen Brunson is regarded by Knicks fans now. But I look back on somebody who, it's Tom Brady. I hate that I have to, all right, before I compliment Tom Brady, I'm going to play the most important sound on the show just to make it absolutely clear. Fuck Washington! All right.
I feel a little very bad. Important. I'm glad that you broke the rules of the show to get that out early. I think that was spiritually, that was
critical.
Yeah.
People understand my stance on this person, this athlete, in that city. I'm going to do it one more time just to be extra, extra clear. Fuck Washington! All right. With that out of the way, Tom Brady is the GOAT, right? He's the greatest quarterback of all time, greatest football player of all time. And I don't think it's really within debate anymore, right? And he took pay cuts while he was in New England to help the New England Patriots continue to build the best roster around him that they possibly could. Now, eventually, the trust eroded there with him in ownership, and the relationship soured between him and Bill Belichick. And he eventually left. And when he left, Boston fans were perfectly within their right to ask, wait, why are you leaving? What is going on here? You know? And finally, when, after Tom Brady left and he won a Super Bowl somewhere else, thus proving he was the reason they won those championships, New England fans were perfectly within their right, if not objectively correct, to then turn around and look at Bill Belichick sideways and be like, why'd you ruin that for us? Bob Kraft, why did you ruin that for us? He could have done what he just did for Tampa Bay for us. And at the end of the day, the combination of being willing to do whatever it takes to help, the New England Patriots win as much as they won while he was there, and also be good enough to come through as frequently as Tom Brady did. That's why so many kids in the greater New England area are named Tom. That's how that's going to play out. That's how you're always going to be remembered for that stuff. And this is part of like the way that the Lakers have been building, and them go like leaning so heavily into mercenaries and being so bad at developing players has probably negatively impacted their ability to bring in a superstar who cares about the Lakers, who cares about the city enough to do just that. Right. And so I think it's this twofold thing, but you're absolutely right. You know, when we talk about like what an athlete owes fans, well, same time, fans don't owe athletes anything either.
But I think the important point to make there is that the fans, you know, just like the athletes don't inherently owe fans anything, fans don't inherently owe those athletes anything either. But you can build up that debt. You can make them feel like they owe you for all of those positive memories that you gave them. Mm-hmm. And that is the way, like, that's why Tom Brady, despite sort of the ugly end, is still, like, you know, I'm sure beloved in the New England area. And, you know, it's like you can build up that goodwill through stuff like this to the point where, again, like this is, you know, a case I saw a concrete table earlier brought up, you know, Isaiah Thomas and the more recent one. And you know, like, and the way that that sort of backfired for him, it wasn't necessarily that he was taking a pay cut. He took what the market, you know, deemed him worth at the time. And then he was in line for a big extension. He played through an injury in the playoffs, played through his sister's death, you know, ended up ultimately making his body worse, was never the same player again. And that sort of ruined his career a little bit, but you know who a lot of Celtics fans' favorite player still is? It's Isaiah Thomas, because he went out there and he gutted it out and he said, no, I'm in this with you guys. Like, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to give it my all for you guys. And that's the kind of stuff that inspires that loyalty. And so there are different ways to go about getting that loyalty. Kobe never took a pay cut. But the reason Lakers fans are like ride or die, you know, for him and his legacy is because he gave them a ton of good memories. And so if you make the max you possibly can and you still win, it's not like the fans won't love you anyway, but the fans are going to love you. You're basically upping the odds of getting a positive story and having a positive relationship with the fan base. If you say, no, there's a little bit more than money in this to me. Like, I care about winning championships and I care about winning championships here. I love this jersey that you all love, and I am going to try and bring us back to prominence. And, you know, there's going to be no replicating that for, you know, exactly for like Luka or any other star with the Lakers. They're just like, there hasn't been that long of a title drought. And so maybe if we get to the 2070s and they still haven't won since 2020, then there's like a Brunson like arc available. And like, but right now that's just not available for any level of Lakers star. But you still can, you know, inspire a ton of loyalty and love from the fans through different means and through, you know, just really like buying into and setting a culture and making it clear, like, okay, no, I am the team captain and everybody is rowing behind me and I'm doing every single thing that I possibly can in every moment to win. And, you know, again, like that's a rep that, you know, Luka doesn't necessarily have yet. And he could still forge that rep, but there is like, you know, there still are a lot of fan complaints with him and some of the way that he does things on the court and some of the way that he comports himself. And, you know, if you change that stuff, again, that's another way to build up that like fan debt where they feel like they owe you and you are their guy and they're going to, you know, they're ready to take a bullet for you.
Yeah, it was super interesting over the course of last year because you had Mavericks fans who rightly, you know, like fairly, cared a lot more about Luka Doncic than Lakers fans did. And Mavericks fans looked at Lakers fans like, you spoiled motherfuckers. Like, why? That's our guy, you know?
Yeah.
Like, be thankful that you have him. And Lakers fans also correctly are like, he hasn't done shit for us yet.
Yeah, it's like that's not our guy yet. Like, we appreciate him. Yeah, he's good.
We want him to be our guy. Yeah. But, yeah, I think last thing really quick, though, before we move on is does the amount of money that these guys have made impact this conversation for you?
I think it does.
Because
a little
it used to be like billionaires were really benefiting from the pay cuts that millionaires far below them financially were making.
Yeah, or even like in the case of, you know, like if we go back to the 80s and 90s, it's like the guys weren't even necessarily, I mean, in the 90s, they were millionaires, but I guess like, you know, 70s, 80s, whatever. It's like, you know, if you were like in the 70s, you know, if you were arguing for a guy to take a pay cut, like you're kind of a monster. Like, you know, it's like that they weren't making that much that you're like, you selfish. Like, I don't even think that there was like a cap then. So it's like, you know, you're just
like driving a cab, like in the off season.
Yeah. You're so just like, you're just kind of being an asshole. Rent, like if you're arguing for that guy to like take a pay cut, it's like,
yeah,
you know, if like there were like, again, I don't, I'm just like making up an example out of thin air, but like if there were Celtics fans that were like, how does Bill Russell Dave think Cowens. He's worth that when the teachers make da 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 da? It's like, no, I mean, you're just kind of being an asshole. Like, this does not affect you at all that he's being making this amount of money. And, you know, like whatever, like you get to the 90s. And again, it's still like the owners are so much richer than the players that it's like, and the money was so much less than it is now. So it's like, you know, you're taking your, it's like even really like when LeBron was in his prime, like a max contract was like $16 million, you know? Yeah. And so it's like,
which him is taking so a haircut, much less than he was worth at the time.
$16 million a year, I guess I should be clear, not $16 million over the life of the deal. And so like when he took a pay cut off of that in Miami, like that was like a real sacrifice to some degree, even though he, you know, he was still, he had made plenty of money. He's still making plenty of money. You know, he would have been making plenty of money off the court. But those are, it's a different calculation. You know, I feel like a lot of us came up in this era where it's like, oh, you're caping for the owners. Like, if you want LeBron to take less. And it's like, yeah, I mean, that's kind of right. You know, it's like Kobe, yeah. You know, had every right to take every penny that he was owed because the Lakers were making, you know, that much like tenfold off of him and off of having his farewell tour in their uniform and stuff like that. But now that it's like, okay, like the, you know, it's like, all right, we're not asking you to play for minimum wage. We're asking you to make like 40 instead of 60, you know,
yeah.
There's not going to be any functional difference in your life whatsoever off of that.
Right. Yeah.
It's a slightly different conversation.
And I do want to be clear here because there's a racial aspect to this too, right? Where
that's why, like, I've been arguing monsters for Luka to take a pay cut the whole time. You're not getting me.
That's good job by you. But like, there was a long time there where, like, it's the same reason that those same people were like, oh no, college athletes should never be paid. And it's like, what's actually going on there? And I, you know, those same people would be like, oh, these professional athletes are making too much money to play a stupid kids game. It's like, well, what else is going on there? And so, like, I think it needs to be pointed out that, like, for a long time, that aspect of the conversation, when the disparity between owner wealth and player wealth was such a large gap, like, that's where I would say siding with the player there made a lot more sense, and being aware of some of the racial undertones and sometimes overtones, you know, that were being brought about in those conversations, that needs to be pointed out. And it's why I'm somewhat uncomfortable still talking about, you know, whether or not players and black athletes should take less.
And also because they are the product, they're the reason we're watching. It's not the owners, you know, like, that's the other thing. It's like, of course they should make the money. Like, they're the reason we're watching. It's not because, oh man, like, you know, like the Pacers owner, Herb Simon, like he's just really contributed to creating this league that I just really care about. And I really value like the financial aspects that he's contributed.
Yeah. At the end of the day though, like with this aspect of the conversation, if a NBA player clips this out and says, look at these two white dudes, even though Mexican guy over here, but like, look at these two mostly white guys talking about us making this less money.
75% white panel.
Yeah. Right. It's like Blazing Saddles, not to give away a family secret, but my mother was a Dutch. But like, If an NBA player was to like, you know, single out this episode and be like, see, this is the problem, you know, to a certain extent, it would be like, yeah, I also would be frustrated with that aspect of this conversation over the last however many decades, because they have been treated really poorly at times by the public and stuff. And that does suck. But through those negotiations and through those sacrifices and through growing the league, you have now arrived at a point where Devin Booker's current contract that I think just starts this year is going to be worth north of $60 million, you know? And it's like, would.
And Devin Booker's like what? Like the 25th best player in the league.
Right. And if Devin Booker had, like, you know, and part of the reason that Devin Booker makes that amount of money is so, you know, to resign in Phoenix after, like, well, like, part of the reason though is that, like, you know, he stayed in Phoenix after they tore down the Kevin Durant Bradley Beal experiment, and he committed to that organization longer term. And fine, like, if that's what you're paying your guy for to stick around for that, then fine. But I also think, and I'd be curious to see if this conversation has taken place very much in Phoenix, but would you be better off just fully embracing a rebuild, trading Devin Booker at that amount of money and, you know, full, you know, taking it on the chin for a couple of years and then bouncing back by the time probably Devin Booker's contract is up?
I don't know. And like,
if you're, the reason that they're not arguing for that is because, you know, again, it goes back to the, like, you know, the building up goodwill. Devin Booker is their guy. True. They have watched him grow into a player from a rookie that, like, sort of no one really, like, it was not very heralded. I believe he came off the bench at Kentucky. You know, again, this was not a guy that people expected to be like a superstar, you know, fringe all-star type guy. And he has stayed there. He's talked the entire time about how much he loves Phoenix and wants to stay there. That's how you build up that goodwill bank with the fans. And that's why that, like, no, there are no Suns fans being like, oh man, I can't believe we gave Devin Booker this bad contract. That's like NBA analysts in general that are like, oh, that's like kind of a rough deal. And I don't know where the Suns are going and whatever. But for Suns fans, they're like, no, that's our guy. Like, we're building around him. Like, if he wants to go somewhere eventually, like, we'll send him to a place that he wants to go. And again, it, you know, you flip it with, like, that's how Milwaukee fans would have talked about Giannis for a long time until he started, you know, flirting with leaving every single other year. And now they're kind of like, okay, yeah, I'm kind of over this. Like, you've burnt off a lot of the goodwill that I would have had for your next deal.
Right. And so, like, I guess, like, without diving headfirst fully into these guys' pockets, I just think that at the amounts of money that they're making, and now granted, at the amount of money that they're also generating, that money has to go somewhere. And I'm not arguing for that money to go into owners' pockets. I'm arguing for that money to be spread across the rest of the roster to give superstar X a better chance at winning a championship. And given that Jalen Brunson did just that and won a championship, that is one of the top conversations that is taking that's taking place around the league right now, is like the greatest market inefficiency that we could possibly find right now is a max level player who is willing to think of this thing like Jalen Brunson did. And
you think all the other bad owners are like, man, you know, Dolan had such a bad rap for so long, and like he just got Brunson. Like if I just get a Brunson, like the whole city's gonna love me too. I can flip my whole narrative.
Like the whole time, like Knicks fans were like terrified that Dolan was gonna screw this up. Did you see the report from June Lee today?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. No. And it's funny because, like, it's funny to hear Knicks fans, that from Knicks sources where they're like, Dolan got distracted by the sphere, and that's why we have a good basketball team now, because he wasn't meddling. Because there had been like so many people to be like, that's sort of my theory. And to have like it even in the building, some of the people that he's employing were like, yeah, no, it's kind of good that like he has that like shiny new toy to play with. He's not coming into my office and being like, are you sure we can trade Cam Reddish?
So this whole time, all that Lakers fans needed to do was for Jeannie Buss to get a hobby. That's it. That's what we needed.
I mean, she tried. None of them were that successful.
That's also true.
She was like trying to finance movies and stuff, and it's like they just didn't do well enough to distract, like getting the Netflix show going. You know, it's just like none of them took off like the sphere has.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this has been fascinating. I'm looking forward to the comment section on this one, to see where we arrive at here. I mean, I've already been called a libtard once, so I'm surprised, you know, to see that word thrown out here for like showing empathy for the racial discussions over the years. But that said, I also find myself siding in selfishly. It needs to be pointed out that I do better financially when the Lakers do better as an organization. So I probably should have made that as a disclaimer earlier in the
Austin,
episode.
Take a pay cut. Anthony needs the downloads, please.
Look, I'm not going to turn him down.
That's going to be like part of my argument to him at Summer League when I confront him in the back hallways.
Yeah. So it's like,
They're going to ban me.
Wait, you've gotten credentialed? No, I'm kidding.
Most of the time.
Yeah. All right. Well, this has been fascinating.
This is going to blow you away, but NBA people not as bothered by my takes as your takes. Often.
Is it because my grandma was a Dutch?
Do we have any super comments?
No, we don't have any. We're good. I'm going to go and cook dinner for my wife on our anniversary.
And because my wife is such a special person, she's allowing my cousins to come over who are in town this week. So, babe, I love you. Absolutely crazy, bonkers week that maybe I'll tell you guys the story at some point. But have a great rest of your day, everybody. Make somebody else's. Hit that like button. Hit that subscribe button. Please tell your friends that you love the show. Tell your enemies that you hate it. And until the next time you guys hear from us, I'm Anthony Irwin. That was Harrison Fagan. Have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's. And we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Bye, everyone.